former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's a great day to be alive, and it's a great day to be a better. Welcome inside to the VSiN studios here at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. This is the Lombardi Line, hanging out with you guys on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe alongside Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. Michael, how are we doing this morning? The first Saturday of November.
And a great Saturday for college football. As you mentioned in the break before we came on air, we've got great games starting at noon. You know, we got a great game with Jimbo and Ole Miss. That's going to be a dandy right there. I think that's going to decide a lot of things of what happens this offseason at Texas A&M. And, you know, and then we continue on with Georgia, Missouri in the Southeast Conference. We've got Washington playing USC. And then at 7:45, we've got the Crimson Tide and LSU in a really, really good game. So, as you mentioned, every window has a lot of compelling moments to watch.
Yeah, and it's not just today. It's also tomorrow as well. So let us help you kind of set the table for what is going to be one heck of a football weekend here. It's a fall. It's crisp out in the air. Even here in Las Vegas, Michael, early in the morning, the sun hasn't risen. Like you get that fall crisp feeling here in Vegas. Now, once the sun does rise, we won't get that feeling anymore. But
you're
right
set
now,
that
it's
clock
nice.
Back tonight, Femi. You're going to get an extra hour sleep, my man. You're going to be able to, you'll be really in tune when you're watching five games tomorrow at one time. You'll be ready to go. You'll be well rested.
We need that clock. We need that clock going back for this Germany game. All right. Like it's coming at the right time for this Germany game. We've got to get up bright and early for that one. 6:30 West Coast time, but that'll be a lot of fun coming up tomorrow. But let's set the stage for what's going on today. We have three guests who will be joining us over the next couple of hours, 30 minutes from now. It's not just football. We also got the Breeders' Cup going on over at Santa Anita. Johnny Avello, DraftKings Sportsbook Director, will join us from Santa Anita. We got boots on the ground at the Breeders' Cup. He'll give us the play-by-play on what's going down over there at the Breeders' Cup, what people are betting, and also kind of highlight the DraftKings horse betting app, I shall say. That's coming up in 30 minutes. Then 45 minutes from right now, 10:45 Eastern, 7:45 Pacific, Brian Broaddus, our buddy Bucket, host at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, also the host of the Love of the Star podcast, will help us break down Cowboys-Eagles tomorrow afternoon in Philadelphia. And then at 11:30 Eastern, our buddy Matt Humans will join us in studio for not one but two segments as he gives out his college football and NFL card for the weekend. But let's get into the college football, because Bryant-Denny Stadium tonight will be where all the eyes are watching this one. LSU, Alabama, the Crimson Tide, 3-point favorites over at DraftKings, total 61.5. Your early thoughts on what might be one of the biggest games in all of college football this season?
Well, this is going to be, I think if Alabama wins, it'll be Nick Saban's greatest coaching job, because I think when you watch the LSU offense, and it's spectacular. It's number one in the nation in so many categories. And Jaden Daniels is, to me, the best player in college football. And he's playing at such a high level. So you're going to have to control their offense. You're going to have to be able to get the pace of the game. And your offense is going to have to execute effectively and consistently. You know, one of the things when you go through the NFL and you see some of the teams that don't win or teams that have struggled is they play too much defense. You know, they play like the Patriots have played over 100 plays more defense this year than their offense. That's two games, basically. And so this game is about pace. This game is, you know, Nick's going to be smart enough not to get in a track meet. He's going against a defense that he can run the football on and slow the game down a little bit, right? And I know none of the analytical community wants to hear that, but pace of the game is so important when you're playing against a top flight offense, as we'll see tomorrow in Germany. And we'll see it at Buffalo and Cincinnati later in the day. So I think it's going to require an awful lot for them to do this. Milroe's going to have to execute the intermediate passing game, because I do think LSU will take away the deep ball, take away the one throws down the field, which he's been very good at, and make him have to execute as he goes along. Look, we know they're the 12th ranked defense in the Southeast Conference, 76th overall, but their relative scoring defense is in the top 50 in the nation. So they've got to play their best game. And with what they can do and coming off the bye, they have played better defensively since the Missouri game. Now, I know they beat Army 62-0, but Auburn, they completely handled 48-18. So we'll see how this goes. Remember, Mississippi was one of the few teams that could get into a track meet with them, and that's what beat them.
Yeah. Well, that's what I wanted to ask you about is this LSU defense, much maligned earlier in the season. They gave up 45 in a loss to Florida State, gave up 31 to Arkansas, 55 to Ole Miss, 39 to Missouri. But it felt like they kind of found something against Auburn, only allowing 18 points in that game. Do you think that the Auburn game was more of a sign of what's to come here defensively for LSU? Because I think that's probably the biggest question mark for people when they talk about the Tigers.
Yeah, no question. And they're going against an offense, let's face it, right, that we've seen the big plays. They average 30 points a game, which is really low. I mean, that's not typical in Alabama. We're so spoiled with Alabama, seeing all these quarterbacks that come through and play well for that, you know, and so their numbers have not been very good. You know, now where they stand out, Femi, is they're the seventh best team in the nation in yards per pass attempt. Why? Because with Milroe, it's not about consistency. It's about that one big play. That's why they're seventh in the nation in that category. So if you're Brian, if you're
Brian Kelly,
if you're Brian Kelly, your defense is saying, look, make him make six, seven, eight, nine plays of consistent throws on a drive and see if he can do that. See if he can beat us doing that. We cannot allow the one strike drive like they did to start the second half. You know, when they're sitting there when they're playing Tennessee to start the second half, all of a sudden, boom, you know, next thing you know, they're back in the game immediately. That's going to be the key to the game is how many third downs does LSU defense force Alabama into? That's going to be the key to the game. Because if they can force him into 10, 12, 13, then Milroe's got to execute those plays. And that's where the Alabama offense has struggled.
Yeah, this is a revenge game for the Tide. Last year, they lost this game down in Baton Rouge. That was the duel between Jaden Daniels and Bryce Young, 32-31 in overtime with LSU going for two and getting it at the end of overtime to go ahead and get that victory. Now the game is played at Bryant-Denny Stadium, where this, for Alabama, like it feels like they've kind of been put off to the side since the Texas loss there. This is their chance to kind of reintroduce themselves to the country and say, hey, we are very much into the thick of this college football playoff race there, but if they can't get the game done here, then it's going to be LSU that advances and takes control of the SEC West. And how about for Jaden Daniels, who you say is the best player in the country? Big Heisman moment for him. If he can get a win in Tuscaloosa, that's a big, big moment for a guy who's leading the country right now in passing touchdowns, 30 touchdowns overall, 3,000 all-purpose yards, and only three interceptions as well to go along with it. Like, he's been terrific all throughout this season.
Right. And if you're like me and believe he's the best player, you need to take the number right now as the Heisman winner. Because if he wins today, if he wins and plays well today, he will win the Heisman. I mean, that'll put an end to it because he'll show everybody on a 7:45 national television stage, big, big game. He'll show everybody he's the real deal, especially going against a well-coached Alabama defense. But look, one thing about Alabama is since the Texas game, they have gotten better offensively and defensively. Mm-hmm. You know, now you can move the football on them. But they've played good situational football, and they have, as Nick Saban says, they have gotten mentally tougher during the season. I mean, they've been behind against Tennessee. They let Arkansas come back into the game. You know, the Texas A&M game was a struggle. It's in College Station, and they found a way to win it. You know, so I think, and the Mississippi game, that second half of the Mississippi game at home was really impressive. I don't know what Bill Berman told the Alabama team at halftime, but obviously he was at the game. He got them going.
He had to get everybody fired up there with that game there. But Jaden Daniels, I can't wait to see him against his Alabama defense. It's going to be one heck of a game between LSU and Bama right now. That spread, once again, Bama, a 3-point home favorite. But we talked about Jaden Daniels. How about last year's Heisman Trophy winner? Caleb Williams and USC, they're hosting Washington. This one, a 3-point spread. The Trojans, a home underdog. The total, Michael, 77.5 between two prolific passers. Caleb Williams on one side, Michael Penix Jr. on the other side for Washington. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, I think, you know, when you watch, and I don't want to hear this nonsense that USC was looking ahead last week when they played Cal.
No, they weren't.
I mean, I don't really want to hear that at all, right? You know, like, I just think USC hasn't played, they're not good enough defensively. I mean, yeah, I know they're the second best offense in college football. They're the 113th ranked defense in college football. Their relative score rush defense is horrendous. I mean, they're in the bottom category. But this is this is Lincoln Riley's type of team. This is who they are, you know. And they're going to have a hard time holding Michael Penix down. I don't care where you play the game. I think Washington, which has kind of gone into since the Oregon game, they haven't really played their best football. They, you know, Arizona State was a close game. Stanford scored 33 on them. I think DeBoer will have his team ready. I think they're, and they'll be good enough defensively to create some problem. The physicality of Washington to me is what beats USC. It isn't about, we get so caught up in USC's plays and their skill, which I don't think is elite this year. But I do think that Washington's skill is elite, and I think they're going to have a hard time stopping them.
Yeah, it's.
I'm surprised it's only three, Femi. I really am.
Well, I think it's just because of the last couple of weeks here with Washington. I mean, 15-7 against Arizona State, and then you're in a competitive game against Stanford, who has struggled mightily outside of the Colorado game so far this season. I think like that's probably why a little bit of recency bias kicking in there. I'm a little concerned from the Huskies from like a run game standpoint. Like they just don't really run the football that much. I know last week they did a little bit, but it wasn't efficient. Only 91 yards on 27 carries against Stanford. I mean, against Arizona State, it was pretty bad what they were doing in the run game. 13 carries, 13 yards. Like I get like Penix and the receivers with Adunze and McMillan and Polk. Like they are awesome, but let's also run the football. Like this is a USC front that you can run the football on. I think if the Huskies control the line of scrimmage and run the football and keep Caleb Williams on the sideline, Washington should win this game. But if you get into a track meet, I think all bets are off, and I think this could go either way.
Well, I mean, Washington would attract me too, though.
They can.
I mean, they're good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, they're good at it. They're good offensively. I mean, and USC has, I mean, USC hasn't shown that they can stop anybody. They can't stop. I mean, they were fortunate to beat Arizona. I mean, they were fortunate to beat Cal. They kind of have gotten a few lucky breaks here down the stretch, or else we would, this line would be 10. That's my point. You talk about Washington struggling the last 2 weeks. They've won. Yep. I mean, USC has struggled against teams that we're not even talking about as powerful, as really great teams this year.
Yeah. In the last four games, USC has allowed 49, 34, 48, and 41 points. That's not good. We'll get to the NFL news and notes on the other side. We're just getting warmed up here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Don't forget on DraftKings Sportsbook this week, new customers can bet $5 and pocket $200 in bonus bets instantly. Plus, all customers can get a no-sweat same-game parlay every day. Download the app and use the promo code VSiN when you sign up. DraftKings Sportsbook, the crown is yours. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line on the DraftKings Network. You can see us over on Samsung TV Plus, Roku TV, Zumo as well. We're all over the place. And at VSiN.com and DraftKingsNetwork.com. Femi Bebefe, Michael Lombardi here on this Saturday morning. Heck of a football weekend. And to help us break down the late afternoon game in the NFL tomorrow, it's the one and only Brian Broaddus, host at 105.3 The Fan, also the host of the Love of the Star podcast, talking Cowboys-Eagles. Before we get to Cowboys-Eagles, Broaddus, how about your LSU Tigers down in Tuscaloosa today to take on the Crimson Tide? How you feeling about that game? You think Jaden Daniels and the crew can get it done there at Bryant-Denny?
I'll tell you what, and thank you guys for having me on this morning. Yeah, this is one of those that you kind of hold on to your ass games. You know, I mean, this is where, you know, if you have a Joe Burrow and Chase and guys like that, it's a little bit more of a competitive situation. But, yeah, LSU offensively has done a marvelous job this year. And with Jaden Daniels and what he's been able to do. And the offensive line is a mix of some veterans. They've got a couple of young kids starting, a freshman starting on the line. And it's never easy dealing with a Nick Saban team, especially when he has that extra time to get ready for you. Alabama went into Baton Rouge last year, lost a tough one on a 2-point play. And so, yeah, they remember these things. They don't make the same mistakes. So I'm hopeful. My son goes to school at the University of Texas. He went to Tuscaloosa earlier in the year and got a win. So hopefully the old man can find a way to do the same.
Well, yeah, no, we're definitely hoping that we can go ahead and get a win. It's a big night for Jaden Daniels as well there right now, one of the Heisman contenders. We'll see if he can win and vault himself into Heisman frontrunner status here. Let's turn our attention, though, to the Cowboys and the Eagles here, Broaddus, because right now the point spread is Philadelphia 3-point favorites, total 47.5 here. And this, to me, it feels like a litmus test game once again for the Dallas Cowboys. They failed miserably in the last one against the 49ers. Do you think that they can keep this one a little bit more competitive tomorrow afternoon?
Well, the one thing, guys, that that the Cowboys can kind of count on is Dak Prescott is going to play well against division opponents. And, you know, depending on how Philadelphia plays them, if Cowboys can block the front, as my good friend Michael Lombardi block the front, find a way to make that happen, then you could do things in the passing game. And I think where Philadelphia has a little bit of some issues is at their nickel corner and then with what they're doing on the outside with James Bradbury as well. I mean, that's been something that that they've had to deal with really all year. I think their defensive front has masked some of the issues that they've had in the secondary. They've had to do some things at safety that are a little bit different for them. So I don't expect Dallas to be able to run the ball in this game. They haven't run the ball really against anybody all year. And so all of a sudden you're not going to magically find a running game. So this might be one of very similar to what the Cowboys did in Tampa a couple of years ago when they opened the season. Then they really just abandoned the running game. They said, listen, we're going to block this front the best we can, and then we're going to try and find ways to make plays on the outside. But the Cowboys defensively have given up some big plays as well, and they've given up plays when teams have schemed big plays. So this should be a really, really interesting one from that aspect.
Hey, Brian, I was going through it this week getting ready for the game, and Pollard's numbers are just horrendous. Yeah. And look, here's what I'll say. There's so much rhetoric about McCarthy as a play caller and his offense. But here's what I think people don't understand. Their offense has controlled the ball for 32 minutes and 23 seconds. They have only played 27 minutes of defense. They're getting more plays out of their offense. They convert. So they're doing exactly what he wanted to do in terms of control the game. But I think the Pollard element, is it that he misses the other big back, or is it just that he's not back from the injury?
I think there's a couple of different things that you put on there, Michael, that are true. To me, the aspect, I don't believe he's fully healthy from where he was. But when you sit down and watch the All-22 on a weekly basis, they're just not doing a very good job up front. Their tight ends get compressed at the point of attack. They draft Luke Schoonmaker to be a tight end, a blocking tight end. Ferguson's done a good job of catching the football. The tight ends, that part of it's not the problem. But they try and scheme things in the running game. They try and pin and pull. They try and combo blocks. They try anything they can to maybe get this running game going. And they just have not been winning at the point of attack nearly enough. Terrence Steele, Zach Martin, they usually are just spot on when it comes to combo blocks, second level blocks. They just haven't got that. And then on the backside, with Tyron Smith, he's, missed some time now. Tyler Smith has had a couple of good games. He's had a couple of bad games. The center hasn't been particularly great. I think it's more about the line not doing good enough in the running game. But to your point, Pollard just he's not able to get to and through the hole like he once did.
We're speaking with Brian Broaddus, former NFL scout, now host at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, also host of the Love of the Star podcast there. You mentioned Tyron Smith. He missed last week's game against the Rams.
Yeah.
Should we expect him to play? I know that they want to see if he gets through the walkthrough today before they go ahead and make a ruling on that.
No, absolutely. And just visiting with some guys before I came on with you about it, practice is important today for him to get through that. But the thing that they're going to try and do, yes, I believe he will play tomorrow. The question now becomes, can he get through the game? They did really all week long. They did everything to keep him out of practice so maybe that they wouldn't aggravate the stinger. But yeah, he's going to play tomorrow. The question will be, can he get through the game? If he doesn't get through the game, then Adoga will be the left tackle that will fill in. He has been dealing with an ankle injury, but it wasn't a high one. It was a low one, like they always say, just a normal one. And so he should be ready to go as the backup if, in fact, Smith can't answer the bell, against Josh Sweat tomorrow.
When you're watching Philly, do you get the sense, and we know he's not on the injury report, but from a scouting point view, do you get the sense that Hurts is really not 100% healthy?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, the thing about it was we've talked about it on our shows here in Dallas on 105.3 The Fan, and then Bobby Belt and I love the Star. With Jalen Hurts, you watch him on tape, and hey, maybe they want him to be a 76 percent pocket passer. Maybe they want him to stand there and be that guy. But where he hurts you so much is with the mobility and the ability to escape and to the, you know, the RPOs and things like that. But, you know, the fact that he's standing in there in the pocket and throwing more balls, and then he, you know, we're addressing that. And then he starts to meet the Philadelphia media starts asking him questions about his knee. He gets up and leaves the press conference. You know, he's, you know, so there's something clearly, whether it's a bruise, bone bruise, there's something going on where Jalen Hurts does not look like the same quarterback. Now, maybe tomorrow he will light the Cowboys up. But yeah, you watch the tape. He clearly is not the same player that he once was.
Yeah, so he's had big statistical games so far this season, but you can see that he seems to be favoring that knee there real quick. We got a couple minutes left here, Broadus. What do you think happens tomorrow? What's your prediction for the game?
I picked Philly to win. You know, the problem I had with the Cowboys is I think you're going to have to find some type of balance. But if this turns into a game where they can't block the front, you know, I mean, the first three, you know, plays they ran last week against the Rams, it was sacks, you know, and so now you're, and they were able to adjust. And, but the game plan clearly was, hey, we're not going to run the ball. We're going to throw it. And we had Zach Martin on his weekly hit with us. And that's what he was talking about. I'm like, hey, Zach, it looked like you guys just, even though you were giving up sacks, you were committed to throwing the football. He goes, no, absolutely we were. So to me, I don't see how Dallas is going to be all the things that we just talked about previously. You know, they're going to try and have to find ways to make plays through the air. And, you know, if it turns into three and outs, you know, Dallas's defense, we'll see if they're up to the task. I you know, unfortunately, I picked Philly in this one, you know, 28-26, when we had to throw down a prediction on that. I just think this is another big test for the Cowboys. Wouldn't be surprised if they played well enough to win, but I think there's some things that they're probably going to have to deal with in this game that they won't be ready for.
Yeah, I definitely think that's going to be the case, Brian. And, you know, one thing, you're right. I mean, Dak has been really good against this division and when he plays in these games. But I'm with you. When he has to throw it more than 35 times, that's when he gets into trouble.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, he's been, you know, the release and all that has been really, really good. If Dallas can protect tomorrow, they got a shot in this one. If it turns into where they can't protect Dak well enough and there's a lot of three and outs, Philly's offense will expose you for the big plays, the on-the-field plays, but the screen game will kill you too while you let them do that.
Yeah, no, this Philadelphia Eagles offense, definitely electric. And the A.J. Brown, we didn't even get into him. He's been one of the best players in all of the NFL so far this season. He is Brian Broadus, former NFL scout, now host at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas. Check out his podcast, Love of the Star, as well. Broadus, we appreciate the time. As always, good luck to your LSU Tigers tonight, and be well.
Thanks, Brian. You guys take
appreciate
care.
Thank
you, buddy. Mike, take care. All right, buddy.
Awesome stuff there from Brian Broadus, as always. Maybe it's a big passing game for Dak Prescott, which might not bode well for my favorite team. The Lombardi Look Ahead starts next hour. Start hour number two here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe at the Circa Resort and Casino in downtown Las Vegas. Michael Lombardi in the great state of New Jersey. 1 hour down, one to go. Fun first hour. We do have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. 30 minutes from now, our buddy Matt Eumanns, host of VSiN Tonight, also the co-host of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. He will join us in 30 minutes to break down his NFL and college football card. He does have a play in Cowboys-Eagles. We'll ask him about that as well. And he has a lot of plays in the big college football games that we have coming up later on this afternoon. But Michael, before we go any further, let's get to the Lombardi look ahead. And we always start off with the game that you want no parts of. And it appears to be once again with the Houston Texans.
Well, I mean, this is an interesting game, right? Because CJ Stroud, I think when you go and there's always perceptions and everybody's reaction in the betting market is, what have you done lately? You know, what's your last game? And then if you play well at any point, everybody just assumes you're playing well all the time. And that's not necessarily the case. That's why I brought up Tony Pollard to Brian Broadus in the last block. I mean, when you do Tony Pollard's numbers, that's not Tony Pollard from last year. 5.2 yards a carry down to 3.8. Doesn't make, you know, one of the worst, 32nd in the league in yards after contact when he was the second best last year. So there's a lot to that. And I think you have to kind of break the teams down in sections, four games. And when you look at C.J. Stroud, you know, early in the season, man, he was really good. Really good. Came in. But there's always the turning point. There's always tape, right? And so people start to see how you're playing, what throws you like to make. I was talking to somebody yesterday in the league, and so much of playing quarterback in the NFL is like being a shooter in basketball. Where do you want to throw the ball? Where do you want to take your three-point shot? And people have to start to say, okay, we're going to take that away from you. So for me, in the last three games, C.J. Stroud, you know, has not been as good as he was early. He's averaging 6.3 yards per attempt. He's thrown three touchdown passes. He's only thrown one interception all season long. But this offense hasn't really been able to get going because they can't run the ball. And Damian Pierce isn't going to play this weekend against a good Tampa Bay front who has Vita Bay returning back. And he makes all the difference in the world to their defense in terms of clogging the middle. So I worry about the Houston Texans offense. I worry about Baker Mayfield, who he and Josh Allen have tied for the most interceptions thrown in the National Football League over the last five seasons since they've came out. So, you know, I worry about Baker. I worry about him getting balls tipped down. And the Bucs defense has allowed over 400 yards the last 2 weeks and 45 first downs. So to me, this is a conflicting game on both sides. Right? It's 2.5. It's moved back down to 2.5. In the Russo contest, it was at 3, so I violated my own Hall & Oates theory. I kind of took it just because I think it's a good number at 3. Yeah. But it's really a game I would recommend that you just cue up Daryl, cue up John Oates, and just don't go for it.
There we go. The official Hall & Oates play of the week, Buccaneers and the Texans. Can't go for that. No, no can do. Love hearing that every single Saturday. No can do. Look at you. I hear grabbing numbers. Say, I take the 3. At 2.5, we lay off. I like it. Look at you.
Well, I mean, look, 3, you know, it's and look, I like Houston's team. I really do. You know, now, okay, is Will Anderson playing good, Femi? Let me ask you that question.
Well, his pressure numbers are really good, but the sacks haven't been there.
He's got 8 quarterback hits.
That's not good.
These pressure numbers, I don't know where they come from. Like, I don't know where they come from. Like, who's grading the pressure numbers? That's what I want to know. I'm going to do a, you know, we got to do an investigative Senate subcommittee here. Like, who's doing that? How about my man Nick Saban on Pat McAfee the other day? Like, analytics doesn't tell you what to do when it doesn't work, right? Do you know how many guys I've talked to in the league that I ask them this question? What did your analytical guy tell you to do during the play? And he says, they freeze. They don't tell me anything. You know why? They don't want to be wrong. They don't want to be wrong. They want to keep their job. They want to keep going. You know, it's like I'm listening to somebody the other day talking about how, you know, the game between the Titans and the Steelers was completely mismanaged because they ran the ball too much. How about trying to win the game? Does that matter? Does that matter? I mean, Mike McCarthy gets a beating about being the worst coach in the league. He's the worst play caller. What he's trying to do is play less defense. That's what he was trying to do. He's got a really good defense, and if he plays 27 minutes, he'll be good. The Patriots, on the other hand, have played 100 plays more than their offense. They play 33 minutes of defense a game, right? They would be a much better defense if they played 27.
Yeah. No, that's complimentary football. It's something that we preach here on the Lombardi line. So it's we're trying to find the balance between those two things. And if you don't have it, sometimes you're behind the eight ball.
I would love people to call pass plays with Kenny Pickett at quarterback. I would love that. So, you know, I would love those guys in their basement that are just, you know, attacking the play callers. Like, you call plays with Kenny Pickett at quarterback. You know, well, you got to get a better quarterback. Okay, well, they're just out there. They're like almonds in California. You can just go to any field and pick them. Like, they're just available everywhere.
I want to ask you, because we haven't gotten a chance to talk about the Thursday night game before we get to the line of the week. Like, how much of it do you think was the rib injury that was bothering Pickett there? Because, like, I get it. He's had his ups and downs for sure, but he was wildly inaccurate Thursday night. There was where it was too high, too low, too wide, yeah. Too, like, behind. Like it's just, I don't know if it was maybe the rib injury that bothered him or what was going on.
I don't think it was the rib because he's been wildly all season. Like, and he hasn't had the rib until last week. I don't know why he wears the glove. Like, I don't know why he wears the glove. You know, I thought he actually had better protection in the game than I anticipated him having. And they were actually running the football in that game better than I expected them to run. Now, the last 3 weeks prior to going in that game, that's why it's so important, really, to throw out the records, to throw out the you know, the perceptions, and really look at what are teams being able to do. I mean, the Steelers, who really haven't been able to run the ball that well, did. I mean, Warren had 88 yards on 11 carries, and he only his long run was 22 yards. Meanwhile, nobody loves Najee Harris, who actually has pretty good numbers all year long, better than Warren in the passing game as well. He had another 69 yards, and he had a long of 25. So, like, the one thing I was counting on, if you bet Tennessee, you were counting on their run defense to be pretty good, and yet it wasn't. The Steelers were able to run for six more yards than they actually were able to throw the ball for. And so that's really what won the game. That was a difference in the game, and the fact that when Levis had to get into a third down game, which is always going to be a problem for young players, which makes Stroud, going back to that game, interesting, because Stroud's, they're 44% on third down for a rookie quarterback. That's remarkable. Mm-hmm. But when Levis gets into a third down game and he's got to throw the ball in rhythm and read it faster, it's just not quite there yet.
Yeah, Levis, he made some nice throws there, and I credit him. Like, your first road start in that environment on a short week, he hung in there, showed a lot of toughness in the pocket, and I mean the arm strength, obviously that jumps off the screen there. We all talked about that in the draft process, but it's the nuances that you just discussed here, like having to speed up when it's a third down game. That's where maybe he's a little bit further behind, to where, hey, maybe if he develops, maybe the Titans have something. But I guess encouraging signs through a couple games there for Will Levis at quarterback. Real quick, they don't go back to Tannehill, do they? They just play Levis the rest of the way.
I don't
right?
think they can. Yeah. I mean, yeah. He wasn't the reason they didn't win the game.
Yeah.
I mean, they're actually moving the ball better now than they ever have.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
When they put Tannehill in there. And Tannehill, you know, let's be honest, he's liable to get hurt. You know, the problem you have in Tennessee is they're just not good enough defensively. They're not to the same level that they once were defensively, especially in the back end. Especially in the back end. You know, they lost Murphy Bunting in the game, and they had to play younger players. So it's a challenge. I mean, look, they have missed on a lot of first-round picks over the years, and they're kind of trying to get their roster back in place.
It was a nice showing out there for Will Levis and the Tennessee Titans, although in defeat, Pittsburgh, which maybe we should just be betting Pittsburgh to start the fourth quarter every single game, because fourth quarter comes around and they make the plays and they win the game. They won once again, now sitting at 5-3. All right, let's get to the line of the week. This one down by the Bayou, the Bears and the Saints.
You want any part of this line? Like, are you telling me that you're going to bet Derek Carr and lay 8.5? Are you going to do that?
Not a chance.
Are you going to take Matt Eberflus and that Chicago bet? You know, I hate Chicago. You know that. I mean, I really hate Chicago. Yes. You going to take Eberflus and 8.5 with poor Tyson Badgett? I mean, are you going to do that one?
Maybe.
Like, what side do you trust in this game? I mean, just blindly, if you made me say you got to take it, I'm taking the Bears.
Same.
Like I would like I. How are the Saints 8.5 points better than anybody?
No, I can't get there. Like I haven't bet it yet. I'm actually considering betting the Bears just because, like, you know my philosophy. Like, hey, like it's Derek Carr, Dennis Allen. If they're big favorites, I can't do it. I actually might go ahead and play the Bajent man off of maybe this being a buy low spot after what we saw Sunday night against our guy Brandon Staley. Like this is Chicago or pass.
Yeah, I mean, but you're going to feel good taking Chicago?
Nope.
Are you?
Nope. You're not going to feel good. But sometimes you got to do it.
I mean,
it.
This is one of those you take it and you don't even turn the TV on. Like, I'm not watching. Like, this
yep.
might not be in one of my four windows if I could arrange that. Like, I don't want to watch this.
I like that.
It might end up being you know what's going to happen? It'll be the best game of the weekend.
Yeah, shootout. You're watching red zone. They're going to keep going back. Let's take it to New Orleans, where once again they're in the red zone. It's like, God, please, enough. Like, we don't need to have that. It's funny because that's my only gripe with the YouTube, the multi-view, is that they don't let you pick. It's not a customizable thing. That's all the variations.
Well, it is customizable if you go to... If you say, I want this game, and then do you want it in a multi-view, and they give you a choice of other ones.
Yeah.
So you can pick your one. I mean, I'm okay on that.
Yeah. I guess they don't let you say, I want this in the left-hand corner, I want this in the right inside. It's kind of like a bunch of variations, which sometimes makes my head spin when I see all the combinations of the logos and all that stuff. It's like, all right, this is a little bit too much. But hey, we love the YouTube multi-view. It's been a nice innovation here for our football viewing experience. But I agree with you, Bears or nothing. It's never Dennis Allen and Derek Carr. are laying 8.5. They have not proved that. Honestly, I wouldn't even tease this. Like, I know a lot of people are probably going to look at this as a teaser leg. I wouldn't tease this because I think Chicago could potentially win the game. Honestly.
I mean, you and your teasers, you're the best. You and your teasers. Like, seriously.
Hey,
we do all this work all week long, and we're going to start teasing this and tease that and tease this. Teasing's for when you don't do any work.
It's a tool in the toolbox.
It's not. It's not. They call them teasers for a reason because the book wins.
Let's talk about some marquee matchups and potential MVP moments next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
There's no better time of year to be a sports bettor. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for college and pro games every week. Sign up today and get access to our daily best bets with a leaderboard to see which VSiN expert has the hot hand. Betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving every game, plus betting systems, premium analysis, and 24/7 video access. Sign up now and get full VSiN Pro access to everything we do through May 1st for only $120. Don't miss this limited time offer. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe to sign up now. This is the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, Matt Youmans joining us here in studio.
Is it the final segment? What's the probability that it is the final segment? I'd like to know.
99.8%.
Yeah, 99.8.
There you go, Matt.
If JVT and Pam don't show up, we might have to go another segment.
So we can't go 100. It might not. I
mean, we can't go 100. Nothing is 100 except for the sun coming up. That's what we go with. But final segment here of the show, we believe, as we go through the college football slate here, and we'll go to the game that you're actually going to be in attendance for in Southern California, Washington against USC. Trojans 3-point home underdogs, total 77.5. How do you see this one playing out?
Well, I think it's going to be a long game and it's going to be a lot of scoring. I would not want to bet the under here because the USC defense can't get stops. Pretty obvious. SC's allowed, you know, more than 40 points a game over the past five. But Washington is a team on wobbly legs right now. You're a four touchdown favorite back-to-back weeks and barely survive against Arizona State and Stanford. Something's not right. And I think, you know, we were talking about Jalen Hurts being banged up. Michael Penix, Washington quarterback's got some health issues as well. You can see it. He's just not the same quarterback and he's not moving around as well. I actually, you know, if USC were a favorite, you know, even a pick'em game, I probably wouldn't play this, but you flip the favorite. USC, you know, a few weeks ago would have been favored in this matchup. And now a 3-point home dog. And Washington, I think, is vulnerable right now. And the Trojans, actually, Caleb Williams showed me something last week when they were down 14 in the fourth quarter, and he rallied the Trojans to win that game 50-49. Passed for 369 yards, two TDs. He didn't make any dumb mistakes like he had made in the previous couple games. No bad throws. And I do think there's a good chance SC is going to win this game. When we planned this trip to go to this game, we thought it was going to be a much bigger, you know, game. But SC has dropped a couple since then to Notre Dame and Utah. But still, Lincoln Riley and Caleb Williams at home are 11-1 with that last second loss to Utah. I think a good chance USC wins this one tonight.
Wow. Upset. Hey, Matt. Okay, so Mike Palm's in Wrigley Field. Uh-huh. You know, it's funny. When they used to play in Wrigley Field back in the day, the end zones were so short that people would actually, the receivers would slip into the dugout. Yeah. It caused a lot of injuries. Gale Sayers played on the field. There was a ton of injuries back then, but I guess they straightened this out. But we've got Dabo going back to Wrigley Field for Notre Dame game, which should be a fun one at noon to watch another one. But you like Clemson, even though Clemson 4-4 really hasn't gotten it together, and Notre Dame seems like they've got their act together.
Well, Clemson's actually a home dog in this game. Today it's in Death Valley. Clemson's a 3-point home dog.
Oh, I thought it was in Wrigley Field. Who's playing in Wrigley Field?
That's Iowa Northwestern.
Oh, Iowa Northwestern. I'm sorry.
The total, might be 13, I think, or maybe it's 31.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's all right. The Hawkeyes and Purple Cats are playing at Wrigley Field. Mike Palm loves defensive football.
He does.
Bone-crushing defenses, and that's why he's there. Actually, he's there as part of a circus sports program.
Mike Palm, I'm looking at your sheet, Matty, because I print out all your everybody's picks every week. Mike Palm's best bet of the day, over in that game. He went over.
He went over in the Wrigley Field game. And, you know, there's a good chance you will see a special teams defensive score, something like that's going to push it over. I don't know. I it's hard to argue either way. When the total is that low, doesn't take a whole lot to get over it, even though the Jets and Giants would have no chance to get over that total. As far as the Clemson game, Dabo Swinney's got his back to the wall. He's at home today. And I think this is kind of the role where he's at his best. Now, Will Shipley's star running back is out. I was hoping he was going to play today. The numbers ticked up to 3.5. So I actually just took the 3.5. I was waiting to see if he was going to play. He's out. But Notre Dame's also missing its top pass catcher. This is one of those spots where the Irish go on the road for an early morning game against a desperate team that's 4-4 and still got a pretty good defense. I think the Clemson defense can keep it in this game, and I'll take the points with the home dog. I think, you know, when you're looking at like Clemson and USC as home dogs, you can't just dismiss those teams. I really think that they're still going to show up and fight. And I like both those home dogs.
Yeah, maybe a last stand for both of those teams. Proud programs there, especially Clemson with what they've been able to do over the last 15 years.
How Clemson's about, got the defense, unlike USC.
If there's one thing Clemson knows, is defensive line. Kansas State and Texas, though, this game has seen a lot of movement toward the Wildcats as a road dog. Right now, we're down to 3.5 at Circa, where we're sitting, which 3. Total is at 50. What do you like in this K-State and Texas game?
Well, last week I went to the BYU-Texas game in Austin, and Malik Murphy, the redshirt freshman quarterback, got to start with Quinn Ewers out. And, you know, I wanted to watch Malik Murphy closely. And, Michael, what I saw is a young quarterback who's got poor mechanics, poor footwork. He was sloppy. He was throwing off his back foot, fading away, lobbing ill-advised passes into double coverage. All right, you can get away with that stuff against BYU, a defense that ranks in the 90s. You're not going to get away with that against K-State and Chris Klieman's defense. And K-State's off back-to-back 41-0 and 41-3 wins. This team's hot right now. I think they figured out the quarterback situation. And the Wildcats should be live dogs to win this game against Texas.
Yeah, I mean, I'm always going to take K-State against Texas because I just think they'll out-tough them. I just really think that Kansas State's just tougher than Texas, you know, and they find ways to do it. But your pick of the week is you're going to take the Cowboys of Oklahoma State and the 6 points. What are they getting, 6 points against Oklahoma?
Yeah, I did take the Cowboys, and I can't believe Mike Gundy has turned this team around. If you watched Oklahoma State at the end of September, you never would have thought that this Oklahoma State team could reel off 4 straight wins in the Big 12. Well, it could be 5 today. And the key is Gundy stopped rotating quarterbacks, and he settled on Alan Bowman, the transfer from Texas Tech and Michigan. And he's also found a running back, Ollie Gordon. Ollie Gordon had 19 total carries in the first 3 games. He's had 5 straight 100-yard rushing games, almost 1,000 yards total on the ground in that period. He looks like a combination of Barry Sanders and Thurman Thomas. All right, that's a stretch, Vinny.
I was going to say, hold on.
But he's putting up those kind of numbers. And Oklahoma State's also playing pretty well defensively, so it's a different team. This is also going to be an electric atmosphere in Stillwater today, because it's going to be the last Bedlam rivalry game for the foreseeable future with Oklahoma going to the SEC. There's been a lot of trash talk to both sides, but I do think the Cowboys come in here with a lot more swagger because they've been playing at a high level, and they're catching an Oklahoma team that's really not playing at a high level right now on offense or defense. So I think the Cowboys will be catching Oklahoma at the right time.
They're live to win this game, the final Bedlam game, which I think is just a travesty for college football. Like, what are we doing? How about Between the Hedges? We know our producer, Elliot, will be paying attention to this one. 3:30 Eastern, 12:30 Pacific. Mizzou catching 15 over at DraftKings against Georgia, total 55.5.
Yeah, I got a small bet on Missouri here, 15.5. And, you know, Brady Cook's one of the best, if not the best, quarterback in the SEC. He's got 15 touchdown passes, 3 picks. He's got a big-time wide receiver, stud running back. There's a lot to like about Missouri. The problem with why it's only a small bet for me is it seems like every time I try to go against Georgia, I lose. I think that, Georgia's hadn't played a tough schedule yet. They still got to, you know, face some challenges, and shouldn't be laying this big of a number, and then Georgia goes out and blows somebody's doors off. But Missouri, if you remember a year ago, Georgia was a big favorite. I think a 24-point favorite went to Columbia and was life and death to beat Missouri on the road. And I don't think that was a fluke. This Missouri team is legit. So I'm taking a 15.5, but it's not my biggest bet today.
How about the Jimbo Fisher Lane Kiffin matchup today? LSU Mississippi. What do you? I mean, excuse me, Texas A&M Mississippi. Who do you like in that one?
Well, I kind of the situation I think is a little bit better for A&M. But I just don't like Jimbo Fisher. I don't like to bet on Jimbo Fisher, and I'm not going to do it, Michael. No matter what you say, I'm not going to bet on Jimbo Fisher today. So that's it.
That's Michael's favorite coach, Jimbo Fisher, over there at Swaggy.
Well, you know, we just got to execute better. We just got to execute better. We're just going to have to execute better. You know, I love his post-game press conferences when he goes over the play-by-play. And, like, he just goes over it, and, like, it's just, okay, we got to execute better. We just got to execute. You know, we had a play there. God was open. We didn't throw the ball. Like, at some point, like, man.
It's never the coaching. It's never the coaching.
No, it's never the coaching. You know, we get a punt block. Oh, you know, we just got to execute. You know, the wing didn't, handle that, you know?
Yeah.
Matt, when do you start making cuts in the contest? When do we get elimination in the contest?
This week, the survivor element of the Circuit Friday Football Invitational kicks in this week. The last place contestant gets cut each week for 8 straight weeks now.
How about
Who needs a big week this week to stay in it? Who needs
Chuck, the Iceman Edel, and Stanford Steve of ESPN.
Ooh. All right.
Oh, boy.
A couple heavy hitters hitting on
the
ropes.
Great work, Matt. Enjoy California.
Thank you. You bet.
Awesome. That does it for us here on the Lombardi
Line. Where's the fast food stop, Matt, that we're hitting on the way there?
In-N-Out, baby. We'll see you guys tomorrow. JV Team and Pam Maldonado up next with Live Bet Saturday here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.